Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Dean Zimmerly on behalf of the appellant, Brian Dohmeier. In 1998, Mr. Dohmeier began entering and possessing property that at the time was owned by the respondent's predecessor. In 2017, the respondent commenced a trespass and ejectment action, and Mr. Dohmeier asserted an adverse possession counterclaim in response. Now, the issue before the court today is whether the tax payment requirement of Minnesota Statute 541.02 is implicated and must be fulfilled in order for Mr. Dohmeier to succeed on his counterclaim. Now, 541.02 requires the payment of taxes for 5 years on property when the property in dispute is, quote, real estate assessed as tracts or parcels separate from other real estate, when separately assessed real estate, when that is the property in dispute.
Well, you will agree that if there is a parcel involved, that there will have to be, there will have to be a payment of 5 consecutive years of taxes with regard to that parcel before someone can adversely possess that parcel. Am I correct?
With regards to the entire parcel, or as this court has explained in the Grubb case and reaffirmed in the Compart case, where a party's claim is to all or substantially all of a separately assessed parcel.
When
a
now, party, can I ask you why? I mean, I'm just looking at the statute, and I want to go through that statute closely because.
Yes, Your Honor.
The second paragraph we're really looking at. What does that mean, and why do you think it is within the context of property law that that's a requirement under the law?
Well, I think there's probably two reasons why that is. The court has recognized there's somewhat of a notice requirement here, that if somebody else is paying your taxes on that parcel of land, that gives kind of an additional notice as to the adverse possession claim. The second thing goes back, and I forget the case this is out of, but basically one of the reasons for adverse possession law is essentially that the policy in Minnesota is that property is made to a beneficial use so that taxes can be paid on it. So I think it probably works hand in hand with that recognition of that's kind of one of the underlying policy requirements of adverse possession.
And there's no dispute that your client never paid any taxes.
That's correct,
on that
Your Honor.
Property. So and there's no dispute that taxes were being paid on that property, right?
I think that there is no dispute in the record that the respondent did pay the taxes for both of these tax parcels for all the relevant time period.
So the purpose of the statute that someone has to pay the taxes on it, in this case, was satisfied because we have a party that actually paid the taxes, right? The respondent paid the taxes.
That's correct. I mean, the taxes for this parcel were, in fact, paid.
And he certainly knew somebody had to pay the taxes on it, right?
I believe so, Your Honor, yes. But with respect to the particular language of the statute, it only requires the payment of taxes by the adverse possessor where the property in dispute, so the property over which adverse possession is being claimed, is real estate assessed as tracts or parcels separate from other real estate. And that's where we get this standard from Grubb that says if you're claiming all or if you're claiming substantially all of a separately assessed parcel, that's when that tax payment requirement must be satisfied. And I'd suggest that the Compart case from just a year ago is on all fours on this point. I mean,
Compart was 20% of the assessed parcel, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, so in one of these cases, you're over half. You're over at 52%.
Just over, yes, about 52%, yes, Your Honor.
So the Supreme Court's guidance on this is slim. I mean, we see 80% is too much, 20% is too little.
Yeah, and it just so happens that this claim falls almost directly right in the middle of where that is.
Well, that's true, but Brian seems to suggest, although it wasn't decided on that grounds, that 50% is a sizable amount. And when you get to be a majority of the property, in this case, majority, why isn't that enough to trigger the substantially? I mean, you've got the majority of the property now.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I think for two reasons. First, if the standard was simply a majority, I think this court would have said when a person claims all or a majority of a parcel.
Well, maybe it's time to do that.
I think if we look back at our past case law from this court, I mean, twice we've at least introduced and reemphasized this all or substantially all portion. And I think, Your Honor, the reason I don't think just a majority should be the standard here is A, I believe it conflicts with the actual language of the statute. And B, I think the reason...
Where does it conflict?
Well, it conflicts
now, where is any of this in the statute about substantially all or all of the property?
Yeah. Well, that is...
I don't see that language in the statute.
Well, it's the substantially all language is indeed not in the statute. And what happened in Grubb was that we had a claim to 13 of 16 acres. And the claimant in that case said, well, I'm not claiming... My 13-acre parcel is not separately assessed. It's not real estate assessed as tracts separate from other real estate. So they're saying, well, I fall outside of that tax payment requirement. My 13 acres isn't over the whole 16-acre requirement. And the district court agreed. This court reversed on that point and said, you'd always be able to get rid of the tax payment requirement, always by just backing off a few feet, if that were the standard. So what we got was the substantially all language.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because that was the concern of the court in Grubb, and Grubb was very concerned about just saying, you know, this backing off. In this case, your client filed a counterclaim, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And in that counterclaim, there's a claim that it's defined as the 46 acres, two parcels equaling 46 acres. They give the two identification numbers for the acres, and then they call it the abandoned land.
Mm-hmm.
And in that counterclaim, and it's called the abandoned land throughout, every allegation is with regard to the full 46 acres, because it's the abandoned land. It's used over and over and over. And then at the end, it indicates that the refinery has no right to this land, and that Damier has continuously possessed a substantial portion of the abandoned land. So I mean, that's the complaint.
Yeah, and
that was issued by the attorney on behalf of his client, and I'm sure he had, and it's not a misprint. It's used over and over and over again. Well, isn't this kind of a backing off?
Well, I'd say because
then he says, "Oh no, I didn't mean that. Forget what I said in the complaint. Now it's only a small portion."
Sure.
I mean, how do you get around the arguments that there's an admission here?
Sure, for a couple reasons. First, I think that's we acknowledge that the complaint uses some pretty broad terms here, but it also, in other areas, indicates that he's only claiming adverse possession as to parts of the land. His ultimate request on count one for adverse possession seeks an order declaring he's the owner of the parts of the land where he's adversely possessed. His prayer for relief requests all or parts of the land be awarded to him. So what we have here is essentially inconsistent allegations within this. And I just invite the court to also read through some of these kind of factual allegations about what he was doing on the land.
I understand all that, but I mean, it goes further than the alternative, because each allegation says it refers to the abandoned land as a whole, and it says that your client continually possessed a substantial portion of the abandoned land since 1998. He's hostily possessed a substantial portion of the abandoned land since 1998, And his request is he wants all of this abandoned land, or at least a portion of it. So,
well, exactly. He's asking for a portion of this. And the purpose of a pleading under our, you know, the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure is to provide notice of what that claim is.
Right, and he did provide notice, and it did do what it was meant to do. It gave notice to the respondent.
Yeah. Here. And yes, exactly. It gave notice to the respondent that he's claiming all or portions.
Your client was claiming the whole 46 acres.
Well, I disagree with that, Your Honor.
Tell me why it's not in that counterclaim, and isn't that version inconsistent with what was said at the deposition?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Domeyer has been consistent throughout discovery in this case about what his claim is. He was asked specifically about some of this language in his counterclaim, and he said, look, it didn't need to say all, because I'm only ever claiming portions of it. He's very clear that he's not claiming all of this land. And I note, Your Honor, that deposition was months before the tax payment requirement was ever brought up in this case. So it's not like all of a sudden he said, oh, I heard that the tax payment requirement, now I'm backing off. He's always maintained that he's claiming portions of this. And
portions of what, though, exactly? I mean, there's reference to abandoned land, and we just talked a few minutes ago about paying taxes. And the taxes were paid throughout by the respondent, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And yet we're referencing this as completely abandoned land. That seems like a misnomer to me. When I pay taxes on land, I don't think I'm abandoning it.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think this is certainly the characterization that was, you know, used in the counterclaim as kind of a descriptor here. This is land that, as Mr. Domeyer saw it, wasn't being utilized by the refinery. And we're not making a claim here that there was some sort of affirmative abandonment that automatically gives Mr. Domeyer title. And I don't believe...
That's what the counterclaim says, though. It says it's a large area of land that's widely known in the neighborhood to have been abandoned by the former owner, which was either plaintiff or one of the predecessor entities. So I think there was an allegation of abandonment made here by your client.
Well, yes, Your Honor. I mean, I don't know that in the technical sense of property law, we have a concept of necessarily abandonment for fee title to land. I think this is more of a characterization or an allegation that the refinery, yes, owned fee title at one point, but they haven't been using that for anything. They haven't been taking care of it, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why Mr. Domeyer moved in and started ejecting trespassers, that type of thing, and made use of it. And I note, Your Honors, that at least the evidence of the record would show that Mr. Domeyer had been doing these things on the land for all of 15 years. And that, you know, looks like what you could call, you know, characterize as abandoned if no one's, you know, kicked him out for 15 years. So,
what do you think? I mean, there are other arguments implicit in all of this, but if we get back to what substantially all means?
Yes, Your Honor.
What does it mean?
What
should it mean?
I think it's akin to essentially a supermajority. It's when you're looking at this, you'd say, for example, pie of pizza, cut in 8 slices. Somebody eats 4 of them. I don't say that you've ate substantially all of that pizza. If you eat 6 of them, you might. If you eat 7 of them, I think you certainly would. I think we just think about this in kind of common parlance about what does substantially all means. I think it means we're looking at this, and it's essentially a claim to the whole parcel. It's the whole thing. I don't think it's just a slim majority. So I don't think just 52%, you can look at that and say, that's substantially all of that entire parcel. I'd say it's not substantially all.
Well, if it was a corporation, you'd view it that way, wouldn't you? 52% of a corporation would be ownership.
Well, I'd suggest that's a majority control.
I'd
agree that it's majority control. Your Honors, I'm out of time, but I'd just like to kind of wrap up by saying, in this case, the standard that this court has applied and reaffirmed is whether a person claims all or substantially all of a separately assessed parcel. As to the 40-acre east parcel, he's only claimed 5%, and I don't think there's any contention. As to the other, I don't believe 50% is all.
Could I ask you this?
Sure.
There's two parcels. How many acres in each parcel?
The west parcel is about 6 acres, a little over 6 acres. The east parcel is a quarter. It's 40 acres.
Okay, and you're claiming adverse possession on the west. How much are you claiming of that?
By recollection, it's about just over three. I think 3.11.
Which is like 52%.
52%.
Of that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and is the east parcel?
That parcel is about 2.2.
Which you say is 5% of that parcel?
Roughly 5%, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. You will have a chance to have a rebuttal.
Morning, Your Honor. My name is Robert Bauer, and I represent the respondent, St. Paul Park Refinery Co., LLC. Your Honor, the appellant is not just an ordinary citizen. He's a sophisticated landowner. He owns 18 rental properties. He bought land from the refinery in 2003, adjacent to what you call the abandoned land. So he knows when he needs to buy it, and he knows when he can try to steal it. One would think that when he buys the land from the refinery in 2003, he'd say, oh, by the way, I've been adversely possessing the other 46 acres over here for the last 5 years. But no, he's buying what he needs to buy because he knows he needs to buy land. And so, Your Honor, you're right. It's the east parcel is 40 acres. The west parcel is 6.2. And substantial portion and substantially all, there are 17 paragraphs in his counterclaim where he says, I want all of it, the abandoned land. He had a chance to amend his pleading. He filed no motion to amend. It was right after his deposition he drew out what he claimed, and it was substantially all of the land.
During his deposition?
Yes, he did.
And so where does that sketch that shows a smaller amount on
in our
parcel?
Well, what happened, Your Honor, is that we brought a motion for summary judgment saying you lose, okay? You don't have a common boundary for 15 years, so that exception doesn't apply.
Before his deposition, you brought a motion?
After his deposition,
okay.
We brought the motion. And so counsel conceded at oral argument that it was not a boundary line dispute. So that triggered the payment of the taxes for 5 years. After summary judgment, during the briefing, while the judge had it under advisement, Mr. Domeyer's counsel engaged a geotechnical person and filed something with the court saying, no, he's not claiming substantially all.
Right, but the sketch. There's one where he sketches something, and then there's the aerial photo. What happens at the deposition? Neither of those things?
He drew the sketch.
He drew the sketch. And then the aerial photo is post the summary judgment.
Post-summary
judgment.
The aerial
photo doesn't look that different to me from the sketch.
No, the sketch is fairly substantial. I mean, he's claiming all of it. In the sketch. It looked,
all of the east parcel, would you say?
It was a substantial portion of it. It's on page 29 of our brief.
Page 29 of your brief, okay.
It certainly wouldn't be just 3 acres.
So when I look at page 29 of your brief, it looks like the majority of the west parcel, and it looks like the corner and a slice down, but a minority of the east parcel.
But he never moved to amend his pleadings in summary judgment.
Right, I understand that. I'm just trying to get at what happened in the deposition. And deposition is this sketch that shows less than a majority of the east parcel.
I would agree.
Okay, and then later there's an aerial photograph that looks, you know, not that dissimilar, I guess, to that. I don't know if it does in I mean, one's a sketch and one's an aerial photograph, but in either case, it's the majority of the west parcel, a minority of the east parcel. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay.
That's how he asserted it, and I believe they did that just to avoid summary judgment. I mean, trying to avoid summary judgment.
Well, and I know what your theory is, and I've kind of dealt with counsel on that, that he was backing off because he realized the effect. But, and I know you're claiming that there's an admission as part of the counterclaim that he, you know, wanted the whole 46, and that's substantially all, and all his allegations related to the whole 46, and that therefore that's inconsistent with what he said later, so therefore it's an admission against his interest. But is that a fact issue that should be resolved by the district court?
No, Your Honor. The court, Judge Hoffman, was very engaged at the summary judgment hearing, and he kept saying, well, you're just trying to back off. And I mean, from Grubb, I think he quoted it in his order, that a particular concern is that a party such as the plaintiffs here could simply avoid the requirement of paying taxes by claiming adverse possession of something less than the entirely assessed tract. And so Judge Hoffman commented, that was one of my colleagues, and I disagreed, and I agreed with the Court of Appeals, that you got to pay taxes on it. There's three components of 54102, Your Honor, as you pointed out. And the first is, okay, you have to do it for 15 years. That's the first requirement under the first paragraph. You have to possess it for 15 years. The second paragraph gives you an exception to that. Okay, if you don't have a common, if you haven't done the 15 years, you have to pay taxes on this separately assessed parcel. And the convenient argument is, well, the assessor's office didn't assign a separate tax ID parcel to this area we're trying to assess.
I need to talk to you about that, because I read this statute over and over again. It's not the clearest statute I've ever seen. Of course, we say that all the time, mm-hmm. Right? If I look at the statute, all right, the first paragraph, how do you read the first paragraph? I mean, what is required here? Because he's claiming, I've got 15 years in. I've already got more than 15.
Yes.
Is that the end of the story for him?
No.
Okay.
So
does the second paragraph provide an additional requirement that he has to meet?
Yes. That requires the payment of taxes, and where the cases have tried to go is, well, the county assessor didn't give a separate tax ID number for me to pay the taxes, so therefore it doesn't apply. And that's not how the statute should be read. It should be read, you're claiming a portion of a separately assessed tax parcel, you need to pay the taxes on it. And I think that's the clear reading from Grubb, is that the legislature didn't intend to have an exception to not have to pay property taxes. So paragraph 2 gives you the exception to the first paragraph. And paragraph...
Well, what do you mean an exception, though?
I think paragraph 2 says you don't have to do it for 15 years if you pay taxes for 5. That's how I read
it. That's how you read it.
That's how I read it. All right. And then paragraph 3 gives you an exception to paying taxes if it's a boundary line dispute. So there's three provisions there. First part says you got to have 15 years. Second part says, well, if you paid taxes for 5 straight years, you don't have to have it for 15.
But if you have 15 years in, I mean, isn't that enough? So you don't even get to 2? Because if you're saying 2 only kicks in if it's less than 15 years, then
the third then paragraph
why
kicks
would
you.
It even apply?
The third paragraph kicks you in because that gives you a boundary line.
Well, we're not.
It's not a boundary line.
That's one thing, right. I think the parties agree on. This is not a boundary line dispute.
Right. So,
I'm trying to figure out what the interplay is between 1 and 2, between paragraphs 1 and 2.
The requirement to pay taxes when you're claiming a separate tax parcel, you have to have paid taxes on it
okay.
for 5 continuous years.
But see, again, I mean, there's two ways to look at it, mm-hmm. all right? And this is why I'm not understanding your argument. One is that if you fall under paragraph one, you do your 15 years, it's yours, okay? Two is if you're claiming adverse possession, but you're less than 15 years, you have to show the five.
Yes.
5 years.
Yes. And what?
And he's saying, hey, I'm under one, so I don't even get to two.
Well,
I think that's the argument.
And I think that's where the district court said you can't back off. Okay, you said in your pleadings you're claiming substantially all. Okay, you never moved to amend your pleadings. You defined it. You said it's abandoned. You said it's all yours. Okay, it's not until after summary judgment when you see the handwriting on the wall that I had to pay taxes.
But see, he doesn't have to get to the tax provision under your analysis if he's had already got the 15 years in.
But if it's a separate, if he's claiming substantially all of a separately assessed tax parcel, you have to pay the taxes. That's what paragraph 2 says.
So even if you have 15 years
right.
in?
You still have to, if you're claiming the entire tract, or what cases right. have now said, a substantial portion of the tract, you have to have paid taxes for 5 years.
So I just want to make sure I understand your argument here. So even if he has 15 years or less, he has to show the payment of the taxes for 5 years
Correct.
On a separate
Correct.
Parcel.
Correct.
Yeah. And why is the law set up that way? What is your understanding as a property attorney?
I think when you're it's to give notice to the I would imagine it's to give notice to the party that you're trying to seize the land from that I've been paying your taxes, so it's going to be mine. And here, the refinery pays its taxes. I mean, it's paid it continuously, and its predecessor has. So there's never been delinquent. So
I'm not entirely sure, and maybe we can hear on rebuttal from the other side. I'm not sure about that reading of the 15 years. I think to get adverse possession, you might need 15 years. I mean, the way I read the statute, it's talking not to the adverse possessor. It's talking to the person who's trying to get their property back, right? It's saying you can't recover property unless, paragraph one, unless you've been there within 15 years, unless it's separately assessed and the other party didn't pay 5 years of taxes. I mean, it's not really directed to the adverse possessor so much as the person seeking recovery. And basically, even if it's been 15 years, if that person had an obligation to pay taxes on it for 5 years,
yes.
it doesn't matter that you've not been there for 15 years. You get it back, right, if
right.
the obligation was there to pay taxes
right.
for 5 years.
And the refinery paid
yeah,
its taxes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that correlates to the adverse possession, right? No. But in any event, we're into... The question, I think, is your argument is there's an obligation to pay 5 consecutive years of taxes. Here's my question. Let's say that the complaint had been written, had attached the aerial view of what he was seeking to as an adverse possession. Would you have any argument? What would your argument be relative to the non-payment of taxes? There's a majority of the west parcel. There's a slice and substantially less than a minority of the west parcel.
I agree with the district
parcel.
Court because the district court had that graphic and said you still have to pay taxes. You had to
why,
pay taxes.
Why would you have to pay taxes on the east parcel where if he's asking from the start, I'm positing a hypothetical, from the start, had he attached that photo or his sketch, and it showed that he was asking only for a small portion of the east parcel, why would taxes be required to be paid on that?
I would still make the same argument, Your Honor. That
why?
Why?
What is your argument with respect to
you
that?
You have to pay taxes if you're not a boundary line dispute and you're trying to claim a tract of land, you have to pay taxes on it.
Irrespective of how much of that tract of land you're seeking?
The cases are kind of all over the board mm-hmm. on what the percentage is. And I think that the district court said, I'm relying on grub because you're trying to back off what you're claiming. Because
well, I know. That's why I want to get into, let's forget about this backing off. Grub didn't have to do with backing off from a complaint.
No.
Grub had to do with taking less than the whole in order to not look like the whole.
Correct.
Okay. But we said all or substantially all. So if someone came forward and said, here's the east parcel, I'm asking for 5% of the east parcel, I didn't pay taxes, I've adversely possessed it for 15 years. Explain to me why there's an argument that 5 years of taxes would have had to have been paid.
It's a parcel separately assessed, would be my argument. It's a separately assessed tax parcel.
What is?
The 40 acres.
Okay, so that's a separately assessed tax parcel, 40 acres, and he's seeking 5% of that.
All portion of it?
Yeah.
I would still make the same argument that the case law interpreting it, that would say it's a substantial, what is a substantial portion of it? Is 5%, 10%? That's substantial.
Okay, so you would just make, it would be around the definition of what substantial means.
Substantial.
Okay.
So that's the courts interpreting and saying what was substantial portion. Mm-hmm. I think the issue needs to be resolved, that you can't just do a land grab and say, I only want this portion of it so I don't have to pay taxes. That's just how you would plead it conveniently to try to get around the statutory exception to pay the taxes.
Well, what if we accept your argument? Let's look at the substantially all language, and we agree with you that as to the I think it's the east parcel that is, maybe I'm mixing it up, the smaller parcel, that was substantially all, and that he should have paid taxes on that, but we don't agree with you on the other parcel, the 40 acres, because it's only a small percent of that. And under the case law, we can't accept that's substantially all.
That would be the result I'd have to live with, but I would think that this court can say, no, when you take it as a whole, you're claiming substantially all. And we have to look at the facts here as pled. 18 times I own the abandoned land. That's abandoned, all of it, and I'm seeking all of it.
Well, and again, that gets to the strength of the admission in the counterclaim. Is that a factual issue that should be determined by the district court?
I think a party is bound by their pleadings, as we cite in the Perry case, that those are admissions against interest. You had an opportunity to amend your complaint. You did not do so. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Your Honors, I want to just briefly address opposing counsel had made an argument or made the point that a claim as to the larger parcel, the east parcel, was a substantial portion, and he used that language. And I just want to be clear that the language this court has used and the standard this court has used is whether it's substantially all of the land. It really invites the court to look at more of a percentage, how much of the whole. It's not a question of whether the land area in dispute is what we'd characterize as substantial or not. I'd go back again to the Compart case. That case involved a claim of 3 acres, which is essentially what the claim is as to one of the parcels here.
It was 20%.
Exactly. It was 20%. It certainly was much less on a percentage basis.
Which is much less than the 52% you're claiming.
But the point is, we're not talking about is the land area big. It's is the land area in dispute big in comparison to the separately assessed parcel? That's what the language of the court has set out.
But you would, it would be if we determine that 52.19% is substantial. That might be as it pertains to the one parcel, but then as I understand it, the garden was on the other parcel, correct? On the
garden was on the small parcel where
small. Okay, yeah. So most of the activity was on the parcel that you had to pay the taxes on.
Well, I think some of the more, some of that, yeah, some of the activity was there. Some of the activity was on the other parcel. Frankly, I don't think it's before the court about whether or not the rest of the activity on the larger parcel, you know, meets the definition of adverse possession. I think there's facts in the record as it stands that makes that a factual dispute.
Can you help me with my confusion about the meaning of this statute? Does the adverse, a putative adverse possessor, let's say that there was an obligation, you agree an obligation to pay taxes, and they pay 5 years of taxes. Do they also have to prove adverse possession for 15 years, or does a 5-year payment of taxes do it for them?
I think it's you'd still have to prove the 15
years. The 15 years.
It's not like this is a shortcut to adverse possession.
Okay.
Because as I read it, the first sentence, this, as Your Honor pointed out, that's a bar to somebody bringing the ejectment action. That's your 15-year statute of limitations. But that limitations doesn't apply, and we aren't going to bar you from the ejectment action if the adverse possessor was required to pay taxes and he didn't. We maintain he wasn't required to pay taxes in this case. Your Honor, I'd like to make one point as well on the language of the counterclaim. You know, opposing counsel cites, you know, 17 different areas, but I think if we actually read these as Rule 8.06 instructs to do substantial justice, you can't possibly read some of these allegations about what he was doing on the land and suggest that that was what he was doing on the entire 46 acres. At the one hand, he can't be maintaining a burn pile on the entire 46 acres and harvesting wood from the entire 46 acres and gardening from the entire 46 acres. I mean, at some point, you have to read those kind of as a whole to say, well, there's parts of this land where he was doing these different things on. And yes, we agree, we could, that counterclaim could have been more clear and probably didn't need to use the request of I'm seeking all or parts, or I'm looking, you know, I'm possessing a substantial portion. In retrospect, in hindsight, that could have used more narrow language. But
is it true, though, that no one bothered to amend the complaint?
Correct, and I don't believe in this case you would have had to amend the complaint, because he's claiming a portion of this land, and that, at the end of the day, when you read the adverse possession counterclaim and the prayer for relief, that's what he asked for at the end of the day. Your Honors, my time's up. I'd ask, based on our arguments today and the briefs, that the district court be reversed and it be remanded for further proceedings.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.